Welcome to the Broadband Bunch, a podcast about broadband and how it impacts all of us. Join us to learn about the state of the industry and the latest innovations and trends. Connect with the thought leaders, pioneers, and policymakers helping to shape your future through broadband. Join us on Facebook at the Broadband Bunch and see the latest episodes, news, and photos. The Broadband Bunch, as always, sponsored by ETI Software. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Broadband Bunch. I'm Craig Corbin. Thanks so much for joining us today. The term digital divide, defined as the gulf between those who have ready access to computers and the internet and those who do not, is very much a reality for a growing number of Americans. Even prior to COVID-19, being able to easily utilize internet technology was not a luxury, but rather an essential requirement for our daily existence. Tack on that global pandemic with the reality of a largely remote workforce, demand for telehealth and virtual learning for students everywhere, and you quickly see the enormity of the digital divide. Our guest today writes about the intersection of business, politics, and the economy for Vox, Recode, and The Goods, and recently tackled the topic of how broadband internet could be accessible and affordable for everyone. It is a pleasure to welcome business and politics reporter for Vox, Emily Stewart. Emily, welcome to the Broadband Bunch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. And this is such an important topic, has always been important, perhaps now never more important. I'm always curious when we look at efforts like this. I'm sure it was an extremely involved research effort for you. How did this, what was the genesis of this particular story?
Yeah, so this is one where we're on. At Vox, we were working on a series of stories about connectivity and talking to one of my editors. The question came up, why doesn't everybody have the internet? Because especially right now, we're seeing all of these stories right amid the pandemic, kids without internet at home, people who are working from home and can't work, or, as something as simple as looking for a job or finding an apartment or signing for a government service. Everything requires the internet, and especially now more than ever. And so this question kind of came up of, okay, so we know that everybody needs the internet, but why doesn't everybody have it? And so that's really kind of how we landed at this kind of journey.
And I think that for many, when you use the term digital divide, there's an automatic assumption that it's just rural America that suffers from the digital divide. I think the reality, though, that's not necessarily the case. What did you find as you began to research this?
Right. I mean, honestly, coming into this story, to be completely frank, I thought, it's another rural broadband story. Not that that's not important, but I feel like we've seen 1,000 of those stories all of the time, that someone in the middle of Maine or Wisconsin or Wyoming doesn't have the internet. But what I really found in this, and I think that is really under-discussed, is that it's also an urban problem, right? It's not just somebody in the country. It's also people in cities. And it's also kind of a two-part problem. Part of it is certainly access, right? A wire does or does not run by my house. But a part of it is also affordability. Ultimately, if the internet bill is $60 that I don't have, I don't really have access to the internet. And so it's a two-part problem. It's a rural problem. It's an urban problem. It's an access problem. It's an affordability problem.
When you look at how the internet is interwoven into literally every aspect of our daily lives, something as simple as making a job application is virtually impossible in many settings unless you have that sort of connectivity. And so the trickle-down effect is immense. What examples did you find in the process of putting this story together that dealt with those challenges?
Right. I spoke to a librarian here in Brooklyn about her experiences, and she was telling me, you know, they've had a lot of people outside of their buildings during the coronavirus crisis because obviously the indoor libraries here in the city are not open. You're just trying to catch Wi-Fi. And she was kind of going through, you know, what people come into the library to use the internet for, because it's also a computer, right? Yes, you have your phone, or a lot of people do have a phone, but you can't exactly update your resume on your phone, or not easily, right? And so I think there are just a lot of things. Like, you know, yes, it's okay to use your phone for entertainment, maybe, but if you need to do your homework, that's not really helpful. I have a job where I type all of the time. I cannot write a story on my cell phone. So it really is a thing where it just, again, I feel like it's in so many parts of our lives that we don't think about. If right now you need to file for unemployment, you need the internet to do that. And you need an easy way to do that, especially as we see that so many unemployment systems are not working very well in the United States. So it really is in so many parts of our lives that we just, I think on its face, we don't think about it as much as we probably should.
And I know that in the process of talking with people, you mentioned the librarian that you had spoken with, but they are examples of people who are really taking an initiative, taking the lead in getting internet for their communities, for their areas, for the benefit of all in the community. I know that had to be probably a heartwarming or a certainly interesting component to your story. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah. I mean, one librarian I spoke to up, again, another librarian up in the Catskills was telling me, you know, the same story, right? They have people in the parking lots, but she really sees the internet as a social justice issue for her. And so she oversees about 9 libraries up in the Catskills. Her name is Grace Riario. And she was talking about how what she's been trying to do with legislators in her area, is find a partner to try and get, you know, a company to come in and work with them to get more people in the area the internet. And what she would tell me is, you know, obviously for a company, this is not super lucrative for them. They don't necessarily want to come in here and give everybody the internet, but for us, it's a social justice issue, and we have things to offer them. You know, she said they have multiple buildings that they feel like they could offer to someone to try and connect more of the community. So that was really neat. And then also, again, here in New York, I did speak to someone who's doing a mesh network, which is, you guys are experts in this, but, you know, where like antennas kind of talk to each other and individuals put in these networks and kind of build them out. And, you know, he was saying that even if they're putting in a handful of antennas a week, that this is a way for the community to sort of take it back into their hands. And it really is people who are on the ground who are seeing why this is important and really trying to help the people around them.
I think part of that conversation also is the need for people to understand what the current state of affairs is where they live, be it locally, be it statewide, because of, and you mentioned this a moment ago, the hurdles that exist for providers to bring service to certain areas. And that's something that I know we want to encourage people to take the opportunity, because now is a golden opportunity to try to bring to bear the political will of as many diverse demographic groups as possible to get broadband to the forefront. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like something that now, again, in the pandemic, we've seen so many issues in our country really come to the forefront that this is really an emergency in so many ways. And this certainly seems like one of them. And broadband is one where if you ask most people, do you think everybody should have access to the internet? It seems like an obvious yes. And so then the question is, you know, why don't we have that? But I think part of the solution to this problem is more people understanding how important it is. And it's not just for the individuals without access, it's also for society at large. everybody having the internet is good for the economy. Everybody having the internet is good for the American education system. We don't want a generation of kids shut out of education because they couldn't go online for a year.
This is the Broadband Bunch. Our guest, Emily Stewart, business and politics reporter for Vox. In the process of doing your story on how broadband internet could be accessible and affordable for everyone, there were success stories that you found. And I think first and foremost, perhaps among them, what our friends in Chattanooga have accomplished.
Yeah, Chattanooga was definitely the one that was kind of the big story that most people talked about. And it really is a neat story and I think an interesting blueprint. So basically in 2010, the Electric Power Board of Chattanooga, which is their city-owned utility, better known as EPB, started to offer high-speed internet to all of its residents through a smart grid. And obviously this is expensive, right? It cost them about $300 million, $100 million of which came from the federal government. And it was complicated. And I hope this is something that we can talk about a little bit more. But, you know, corporations that sell us the internet don't necessarily want to compete with the public sector. And that's part of what happened in Chattanooga, was that Comcast actually sued them to try to stop them from doing this. Comcast was giving internet. Chattanooga did not want to compete with the city. But ultimately, Chattanooga won that battle. And so they brought super high-speed internet to much of the city. But of course, they didn't win every battle. So they still cannot expand their really good internet beyond their footprint. So basically, a way to think about this is if I'm a kid who goes to school in Chattanooga but lives in the country and their internet doesn't go out to the country, the EPB can't extend it to my house, basically. They have to stick to kind of their footprint. But it is a really neat project. And now you've also seen during the pandemic, you know, they've been able to offer free internet to underprivileged kids. And they're going to do it for 10 years. So this is a project that has really long legs in terms of helping the community.
You know, to that point, from your perspective, and you've talked about the interaction between public and private entities, what type of balance, in your opinion, should there be or does there need to be between public and private entities to help tackle the digital divide?
I certainly don't have the answers to this. I think this is a giant policy question. But I think kind of what I discovered, at least in reporting for this and talking to people about this, is if it were lucrative for everyone to have the internet, everyone would have the internet. If telecom companies, if it were, you know, they want to make money. And that's what they're supposed to do. That's what capitalism is. That's what they're in the business of doing. But there are limitations to that because it's not lucrative for everyone to have the internet. If it's going to cost tens of thousands of dollars to extend a wire to one house in the country, they don't want to do that, understandably. And so it seems like there really needs to be a public sort of component here. And what that looks like, I think, is definitely debatable. There are answers, you know, at municipal level, at the local level, right? But there are also, you know, perhaps bigger answers on the federal level. There are plenty of proposals. I mean, we saw in the presidential election, Elizabeth Warren proposing a public option, or Bernie Sanders running on the idea of the internet becoming a public utility. Now, these are big sweeping solutions that are not on the legislative table today. But it certainly seems like something where the private sector cannot do all of this. They're not willing to, and we shouldn't expect them to. And so we need the public sector to have a role.
You know, on a similar note, there are those who probably wished that the country had taken on internet in a manner similar to the way that, you know, our interstate highway system was first designed and envisioned back in the 50s, with the scope of that looking to cover as much of the country as possible. Would there also need to be sort of the think globally, act locally mentality for people on this topic?
I mean, I think, again, it's tough, but I think right now, like the sense that I got, at least reporting for this, was that there are obviously some really big sweeping policy measures that could happen. The ones that I mentioned, also Representative Jim Clyburn has a proposal that would put $80 billion toward expanding, you know, broadband across the country, and also providing some sort of a subsidy for people. So that way, you know, telecom providers are happy because they're still getting paid. They don't care if the government's paying them or I'm paying them, right? But there also is just a lot, I think, that, you know, can happen on a local level. And a lot of the people I spoke with said, you know, we feel like when people start to see what can happen on the local level, whether it be a mesh network or something that happened in Chattanooga, or plenty of cities and localities that have sort of dealt with this problem on their own, it really does build momentum so that there can be changes at the state level, so that there can be changes at the federal level. Because right now we do have, you know, a pretty powerful corporate lobby that is blocking some of this.
Well, and part of that equation, you made mention of the opportunity for additional bills to be passed with additional funding. Of course, we're on the cusp of the RDOF auctions. Which will bring upwards of $20.5 billion earmarked for broadband. But part of that equation is that it's based on data that in many cases is not completely accurate with regard to what areas are unserved or underserved. And so the challenge remains, yes, there's money to be spent for it, but is it going to be spent in the best possible way? And I know that's a huge challenge in looking to the next 5-10 years on how the country tackles this topic. Obviously, you saw the good, the bad, the ugly in putting this story together. What was perhaps one or two things that left you optimistic about the future of broadband connectivity in the United States?
The people that care about this really care about it. This was one story where, you know, you write a story and it goes out into the void and who knows if people will read it. And this is one where I had a lot of people writing, being like, do you want to talk about this or what about this or have you seen this other thing? And it seems like an arena where people really want to make a difference, and the people that are active in this space, the activists, like, they know kind of the solutions and they're really working hard toward them. And you don't see that in every arena. And I think that's, you know, really heartening. And I think also there is really an awakening, and this might be my own personal hobby horse and optimism, but I think people are paying more attention to corporate power in the United States and what it means to have really really lax antitrust system. And, you know, right now, obviously, we're talking about the Googles and the Facebooks, but we also need to be talking about the Verizons and the AT&Ts and the Comcasts of the world. You know, I have one internet provider, basically, and I live in a major city. I am at the whim of them. And I think a lot of people have this experience. And I think, you know, the more people kind of recognize what it means when we don't have competition, like, that eventually starts to make a difference.
I think you hit the nail on the head, because when providers are in the position of, you know, not having to worry about competition, not worrying about whether or not there's somewhere else for their customers to go, then it's a very different ball game. And so it's obvious that part of incentive in this particular story was your own example, your own experience in one of the major metropolitan areas of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it really is just, this is just where I feel like the internet, as much as it seems kind of weird to talk about, like, Wi-Fi and internet access is like an interesting topic. Like, everybody I know complains about their internet, says they have bad internet and it costs too much. And I feel like this is really an arena that I think people kind of understand what's happening, even if they don't think about it. And there are a lot of arenas where we see this happening, right? Like, you probably for your cell phone provider too, right? Like, how many options do you have? Is it really awesome service? And there are things where just like, they are really expensive and they make our daily lives worse than they could if maybe we had more options so that we could shop around and force companies to compete with each other for our business.
I know as a reporter, there are stories and topics that that you cover that perhaps don't resonate for, you know, future articles, future stories. Is this one that you could see readdressing at some point down the road?
Yeah, I definitely hope so. I mean, like I said, this is one where it feels like people care about it, but it's also something that it has so much impact in people's day-to-day lives. And we're seeing this now, but it's always a problem, right? And I think that especially right now, we're in such an unprecedented moment in the United States. It's super important to tell the story of what is happening in kind of every aspect of the economy, but in how people are living it. And so right now, people are really living a world that is online, whether it is entertainment, whether it is, again, work, school, like literally everything is on the internet. I mean, at least I barely leave my house at this point, right? So it feels, you know, it just feels like it's a really important subject. And you know, there are just so many cool projects going on around the country that I think that really, you know, merit being highlighted.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you sharing with us on the Broadband Bunch your story, how this all came to be. Would love to look at an opportunity to revisit the topic with you on down the line to see how things have developed. It's such an important topic. Obviously, our hope is that that digital divide will shrink and shrink quickly, and we will think positively as we approach that. But Emily, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your insights on this important topic.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That's going to wrap up this edition of the Broadband Bunch. Thanks so much for letting us be a part of your day. We'll see you next time right here on the Broadband Bunch.